Have you ever noticed all the meanings for the word, the single word love that we use? I mean, I love my socks. I love you. I want to spend the rest of my life with you. Same word. It seems like one should be a little weightier than the other, doesn't it? I mean, I really love my socks. I have my reindeer socks on today, and I have had these socks, I can't even tell you how long, and they still don't have holes in them, so I really do love and appreciate those. But honey, wherever you are, I appreciate you. Is she in here? Oh, she's not here. Well, I got to make sure I clear that up. So the weightier one, of course, is the love of our beloved, right? And beloveds, and all of you, and all the people in our lives, of course. In Greek, there are several words that describe love. One is eros, erotic love, romantic love, the one that we often assign when we think of love, the swoony kind of love we love to talk about, right? I could use love a lot in these sentences. And then there's the philia love. Philia love is brotherly love or sisterly love. It's the kind in the Bible where Jesus talks about loving your neighbor, right? Loving your neighbor as yourself. So there's that kind of love. And then there's a kind of self-love called philousia. Philousia love is self-love that can actually be two kinds of self-love. One, the kind that we're after and that we're talking about, is that kind of self-care, self-love, compassion for self, forgiveness for self, kindness to self. And then there's the other one that's sort of self-aggrandizing, you know, that kind of love of self. That's not the one we're after here. But that has kind of two splits to it. And then finally, there's something called agape love. Agape love is love of God and God's love for us. And so it's that kind of relational love that is really gets us at our, in unity, our first principle, which is about the nature of God, that God is our source, that God is this infinite presence, this all-powerful and all-loving presence that permeates the world. And so it's that our relationship to that principle of love. And so in order to make it relational and devotional, we, you know, often we'll put a face on it or use words like mother, father, or beloved, or friend. The Sufi poets have that down well. So that very devotional kind of feel to love, that's part of agape. Agape is unconditional by nature. It's a kind of love that just keeps on, just like we just experienced in the meditation, it just keeps on giving, and it keeps on giving, and there's more, and there's more. There's no limit, there's no end, there's no stopping. The only stoppage is when we choose to block. That's the only way that love can stop, and it still doesn't stop. It's still there, it's still coming, it's still there for us and for everything in the world. And so agape is the kind of love that we really want to become friends with, right? This kind of infinite love, this kind of love that will be there for us in times of human experiences when we might feel sad, in times of human experiences when we might feel lonely. There is still love. It's right here within us. It's everywhere present. We don't have to go looking anywhere. We don't have to do anything to receive it. It has no strings. It's not based on any particular circumstance. We are just loved as a part of the creation. We are loved because we are the very essence of it. That's our second principle in unity, that I am, that divine aspect of us. So the mystics really knew this kind of love, and as I mentioned, the poets and the mystics really had this sense, this understanding of this love for God, this deep devotional love for God. Saint Teresa of Avila was one of them that was pictured in a beautiful sculpture by Bernini. We have a slide for it. And in this sculpture is a depiction of a vision that Saint Teresa had. The vision was of this angel who appeared to her and pierced her heart with love. In her words, she says, "I saw in his hands a golden spear, and at the point of the iron, there seemed to be a little fire. This, I thought, he thrust several times into my heart, leaving me all on fire with a wondrous love for God. It said that after she had this vision, the trajectory of her life actually did change, and the work that she did became imbued with a kind of sacred masculine energy as well. She had more action and more administrative kind of energy in the world, and she did more to establish more of the convents that had been, and she reformed them into Carmelite, the Carmelite lineage, and into back to the roots of more prayerful life. She felt like the nuns had gotten away from the very rootedness and the steepness in the prayer and the austerity of that way of being. And so they became known as the barefoot Carmelite nuns, back to the basics. So all of that came from this mystical experience. And I bet many, if we shared today, if we passed the microphone around, a lot of us could share, maybe not an experience exactly like that one, but something similar where we felt pierced by divine love, penetrated in some way by divine love, awakened by the feeling of oneness, the knowing that that presence is a part of us and us a part of it, and that it never stops loving. Many of us would have had these, and if you haven't had these kinds of experiences, you can ask for them in prayer. I'd like a dream or a vision or an experience that helps me ground this sense of divine love, helps me know it from inside out, that there is this love available to me and that it is in me and it's accessible to me. And that there are times when I forget, but there it is again. And so it's that kind of experience that leaves us not just agape, but sort of agape, right? To play on the word a bit, you know, that sense of surprise that comes with it. And we're not chasing these experiences to have some kind of phenomenal experience to tell our friends about, but just to open to them so that we can ground them in our knowing and walk with them in our walk of faith, that first aspect of Advent that we talked about 2 weeks ago, that it bolsters our knowing, our devotion, our faith. Really, that's what it comes to, is a devotion when we love God back, if you will, when we love the divine. It's often through a devotional practice that happens. It might be chanting or songs like we just sang that Andoni led us in the meditation, that kind of, like I said, puts a face on God in a way. So God becomes mother, father, beloved, friend, whatever it may be. Or ritual or an altar maybe that you create. My altar has faces of deities that really speak to me. It has, you know, the elements and some natural things, and all of those things fill me. So when I'm meditating there, I sometimes just open my eyes, light a candle, and just let the images also be a part of that experience. So that's the devotional side of us. And maybe that's an area that you want to cultivate, or maybe that's very much who you are. And so you know this sort of this love that goes back and forth between you and the divine, of the many names that we use for the divine. So when we do have these mystical types of experiences, to really allow ourselves to incorporate them, we can maybe write them down or draw them or somehow capture them, incorporate them, dance them, express it in some way so it is a part of us. So often something will happen like this, and afterwards we'll sort of dismiss it or it'll fade away, you know, and then we'll kind of some of us will question, did that really happen? Oh yeah, I forgot about that. You know, happened a long time ago. So maybe this week you could recall an experience, or like I say, pray it in, and allow yourself to really be with it and feel how real it is. I mean, it's very real for Saint Teresa. When you hear it sounds so maybe hard to grab onto in with our minds, but yet we know that this isn't just an object of our brains and our mental understanding. Our spiritual understanding involves so much more of us, calls forth so much more of us, and love calls so much more of us forward as well. Yet it can start with just like the meditation, just receiving and receiving and receiving. You know, I think we're hungry for that, aren't we? Aren't we hungry just to like, let it all, I don't have to do anything. I don't have to serve this up the right way. I can just be and receive. Because when we do that, when we open ourselves and let the love just pour in and infill And it's, of course, inside of us too. So let it be released from the heart. Let it pour out as well. Then it just naturally becomes who we are. It just naturally is who we are. We don't have to do something or make something of it or set up a list of 10 goals of the ways we're going to be more loving, you know? It's like, oh, so much striving we sometimes address to these things. And yet we can just open to love. And when we open and like get quiet and take a moment like we just did all together, it's like it just pours in. You feel it? Just even now. It's like so palpable in this room. Just breathe it in. Allow it. Allow it to sink in. Really allow it. Breathe it in, every cell. Yeah. It's very much like last week when we talked about resting in peace, you know? I think it's a lot of what we're calling forward right now. It seems maybe counterintuitive to, wow, there's so much work to do in the world, and there's so, you know, but sometimes it's this that is key. It's the allowing, the receiving, the really drinking it in that is key to being of service in the world. And so it's this dance with love. And all that said, of course, it does spill over. It does become then something we share. It does become some way that we, agape love is not just about us loving this entity, whatever we call it, this energy, and it loving us, but it's also how is it then moving through us? How does it spill over? When it spills over, do we want to guide it in any particular way? Or are we guided to bring it forward in any particular way? So C.S. Lewis talks about the four loves. He wrote a book called The Four Loves. And in it, he describes agape as the highest form of love. So if you think of agape more as an umbrella, then it infiltrates in all these forms of love, right? So it's the divine love, it's a higher plane of love in a way. You know, I again, love my socks, but that's not quite the same kind of love, right? We're talking about something else here. We're talking about something beyond a material object. We're talking about something that fills us, that brings us joy, that lightens our load, that we couldn't help and are so excited to be able to share. I was thinking about somebody who embodies what C.S. Lewis talks about. He goes on to say that love that is passionately committed to the well-being of others is a form of agape love, the kind of love that is committed to the well-being of others with passion. So I thought about this woman, Marla, that I knew sort of, I didn't know her well, but I got to know her through the experience of her daughter, Bree. Her daughter, Bree, was the last child that I know of that she adopted. I think she had about 7 children that she had adopted. She's a single parent. I think she worked, too. I'm not sure how she did it all. And Bree was actually non-responsive and vegetative when she was born. And the doctor said she wouldn't live long. And Marla said, I'd like to foster her, I'd like to take her home. And they allowed her to do that. I think she was working in the hospital somehow. And so she had all these other children at home. And Bree, I think, she could only be in the living room. She had some machinery that helped her stay alive. She hadn't really been touched much. And they just brought her in, like just loved this being. They touched her and they talked to her and she communicated with them somehow and she became a part of their family and she became a sibling and a child that wouldn't have lasted more than probably days or months in the hospital without that kind of love, that kind of passionate care, commitment to the well-being of others. That's what Marla showed and her children showed, and Bree lived to be almost 12 years old. And that was a very hard memorial to do. But we just loved all the way through it, you know, as we do when we gather, when we let go. This is the hard part for us humans, isn't it? It's the letting go. We think when we let go, when we lose somebody physically, that we are separated from their love. But nothing could be further from the truth. They are even more accessible to us. We don't have to be in the same place at the same time to feel their presence just being with us. And so it's the same when things end, when relationships end, when, you know, it tears our hearts apart in a human way. But if we can bring it into the agape light, into the agape love, it becomes something else entirely. It becomes something still palpable, something that still fills us, something that spills over, something that is greater and multiplied and more prosperous than it could ever be contained by a body. And so that's the kind of love that we want to draw forth, that we want to allow, that we want to receive, and that we want to just be. And it may not be for us to adopt 7 children with physical challenges, but we may have something else that is ours, and we'll find it if we haven't already. Or it will find us, and there we will be, just spilling over in love because we've been practicing receiving, and that being will be blessed by that experience of being in our presence, because then we are that agape love. We are that divine presence. So are you passionately committed to another's well-being? Is there someone in your life that you are passionately committed to, or something that you are passionately committed to that serves the well-being of others? And if so, while we are passionately committed to that, it's important that we also be passionately committed to our own well-being, right? To find that way that we continue to infill and care for ourselves. So it always is about a both and all of it, and not having to do any of it well or right or perfect. Giving all of that up, because love, as Andoni's saying, doesn't care. That's not what love is about. Love is about showing up. Love is about being open. Love is about allowing. Love is about receiving. And the rest kind of takes care of itself. So, you know, when we know, when we have these experiences of knowing, even a moment, it doesn't have to be a big mystical experience, it can be just a quiet moment of knowing how we are loved, knowing that we are loved, we start to tap that knowing that we are loved beyond measure, that there can be no end to this kind of love, that if we are lonely, that love will come in and be our companion. If we are sad, that love will soothe our hearts. If we are angry, that love will help us breathe back into a calmness and a groundedness and a clarity. That if we need guidance, love will be there to show us the way. We can ask ourselves anywhere, at any time in our day, what would love do now? How would love respond to this when we have a question that's up? Let love be the guiding light. Let love be what we put out first as our guiding star. It will always lead us to the right decisions. It will always bring us into more love, more experience of love, more knowing of love, more embodiment of love. It's agape in action. In John, it's said that there is no fear. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. And perfect we get hung up on, but wholeness, you know, whole love casts out fear. I like to think of the Holy Spirit as the whole spirit of love. And so that Holy Spirit that infuses everything, including us, it casts out fear. It can cast out fear if we allow it to. That's the key right there. Because there may be places in our lives where we are still believing in, allowing that belief to seep in that says we are somehow separate. Separate from the divine, separate from each other, separate from ourselves maybe, or separate from our bodies, separate from our whatever. We get into that kind of belief, and it comes from fear, and the fears sort of can build if we let them take over. So it is about this conscious walk of being clear that perfect love, whole love, this love that I have access to, casts out any fear. That there is no fear in love itself. So we let love cast out our fears. You know, scientists say that we only use a very small percentage of our brain. And yet I think we probably use a very small percentage of the capacity of our hearts. And so if we begin to work here in the heart, we begin to see, there's that little shadowy idea I had about separation or that fear that is present there. And we just let it dissolve in the light of God's love. Just watch how you bring a little love in and it just fades away. Because it has no permanent life of its own. It's only there because we believed it so and we believed it into being, so we can unbelieve it out of being too. We can cast that fear out with ease. To heal, Stephen Levine said, who was a person who did a lot of, well, he both was a Hindu and Buddhist teacher, and he wrote a lot of books and poems, but he was known best for his work with death and dying. And he says, to heal is to touch with love that which was previously touched with fear. That's what it is to heal. To touch with love that which was previously touched with fear. I love it because it makes it so light. It makes it so, you know, we're not carrying the heavy burdens of the past with his way of speaking to it. It's like, oh yeah, I touched that with fear a long time ago. Am I still touching it with fear? I don't want to touch that relationship with fear anymore. Let me touch it with love. What would that look like if I touched that with love? What would it look like if I came to it with more softness? What would it look like if I came to it with more openness, more receptivity, more allowing of the divine? It changes everything, doesn't it? So those old relationships that maybe still have a little something to them, a little, you know, grist for the mill going on, or current relationships that have a little of that going on, we can just say, you know, how about if I just give it a little bit of love, touch it again, see what happens. Love forgives, it wipes away, it melts everything back into its truth, that it is all there really is love. We think in unity often of God as being love, and I think that's probably the right and perfect term for it. It could be socks too, or chocolate, or whatever your pleasure is. But some of us, you know, we hear all this, and yet there's a stubborn parts of us. You know, anybody else have stubborn parts of themselves that they work with? Yeah. In this time of year, we can cast that in the sort of Ebenezer Scrooge-ish kind of way, you know? Remember, Scrooge was stingy, right? But why was he stingy? Because he feared. He had fear around not having enough, right? He carried beliefs around lack and limitation, and he was mean. And why was he mean? Because, you know, maybe he was afraid of rejection or getting close or vulnerability or love itself. It's pretty powerful love. So I could see where it'd be a little bit scary. Anybody ever get scared when you start falling in love? It's like, oh no, people run the other way sometimes, you know? End the relationship, cut it off now. The love is too big, it's too scary. I'm gonna get swallowed up in it. Anybody, am I just like going on about my own experiences and you're all like, she should be quiet. I've never had that experience. Yeah. So Ebenezer Scrooge is shown, right, by the ghosts of Christmas past, all this. He is shown these, and he breaks the chains of these old fears that have been keeping him in misery, really. I mean, he's a miserable being. And these chains get broken open, and the ghosts of Christmas past get released. That's what happens when we touch our past fears with love. They just get released because that's all they're not real. I mean, they seem real. It feels real. The separation, the anger, the why I'm so mad at so-and-so, it feels really real and justified, right? And then we just blow it a little kiss of love and it's like, made of paper, house of cards. So that's really our work, is to be like Scrooge and touch once again that which we once touched with fear, with love, and heal it. Then he's completely transformed in the story, right? Scrooge becomes a very generous and loving and connected being. And he's not like transformed, I mean, we use that word a lot, but it's not like he's a changed being. I mean, it seems that way. But the truth is, he's just a released being. The splendor, the generosity, the love, the connection, the kindness, it was always there because it's always there in all of us. In all of us. That's really important to remember when we think, well, all of us except, right? And then you got your short list. So let's touch those with love this week too. and see how things transform, how free you might feel, how open your heart may be, how much more love there is to receive and to be and to embody. Because the truth is, there's only love. And we are it. Let's know that. Let's be that. Let's affirm that together. Together? Agape. There is only love. And I am it. And so it is.